And right now we've got one of our faves, man. We've got the great John McClain of the Houston Chronicle and Sports Radio 610, brought to us by Horn Solutions. Mr. McClain, how you living today?
Well, I'm doing great, and I want to pass along a piece of news right quick. People have read the Houston Chronicle for a long time. No, remember our former high school writer, Bill McMurray, worked for the Chronicle from 60 to 96. I worked with him from 76 to 96, and he and his wife moved to Hot Springs, Arkansas. They loved it up there. He died there yesterday, 87 years old, and Bill McMurray had a magazine called Gulf Coast Football. It was all high school, and I'm sure Clint Sterner was in there at least 3 years.
That's it. 96 was a big year, man. That was the last year. So I'm sure I was. Mom's got a couple of those books stashed away in the closet or in storage somewhere. John, you know, Mom didn't throw away anything that
of course had, not. Parents got it all. The 1 year Bill, the Chronicle, put an ad in his magazine. It was a big ad with me. This would have been 77. Said, read the best Houston Aeros coverage in the Chronicle. I was covering hockey then, Rick, with Gordy Howe. And he goes, and little bitty ad down at the bottom on the right, and this would have been Gary Kubiak's junior year at St. Pius X High School, and it was a picture about Gary Kubiak has a chance to set a lot of records in his senior year, and he set all the records in his senior year and went to A&M. And somebody sent me a copy of that when Kubiak was the coach here. So I took him over and I showed him. I said, do you remember this? And I showed him that big old picture of me and that little bitty old picture of him. I said, we come a long way since 1977.
Yes, that's good stuff. I didn't even know, Rick. I didn't even realize that Kubiak was a quarterback here. I mean, I didn't realize he was from this area. So
I'm a history major in college, man. I love hearing this stuff. Yeah, and God bless the man who
Bill
lost
McMurray.
His life, Bill McMurray.
Bill McMurray, one of the all-time greats.
And, you know, anybody listening who knew him, your family members, we're feeling for your loss right now. God bless you all.
Thank you, guys. David Barron's got a story that I tweeted out on Texas Sports Nation and Cron.com. And so anyway, back to football. Well, one of the good things about covering high schools here like he did forever, think about all the high school kids from this area who went on to have not just great college careers, but great NFL careers. So he followed them their entire career, stayed good friends with a lot of them. And I never understood. I know they loved Arkansas, but still, when you're entrenched in Houston, like my wife says, well, she's from D.C. And she said, well, let's go do like her parents, go from D.C. to Florida. I said, you can go from D.C. to Florida. I'm never leaving Houston. I'll never leave Texas. I'll come visit you, but I'm never leaving Houston.
And that's your wife you're talking about.
Yeah. And so
Houston, you win.
I would not. I would never leave Houston unless it's in a box.
There you go. I tell you what, I love
B-Mac,
the hill
go ahead
country.
And pull that, man.
I've been in Hot Springs is a really, really cool place, especially if from a retirement community. I mean, it's unbelievable. 7 or 8 golf courses, Hot Springs Village. I mean, it's just a world of its own down there from a retirement standpoint. It's absolutely beautiful, but I would have a hard time. Being from Texas, being from right here, I would have a hard time choosing Hot Springs over the hill country of Texas. And I know the hill country's changing. It's blowing up there between San Antonio and Austin and all that jive, but I would have a hard time picking Hot Springs over that, and I've got roots in both places. So
sometimes, Rick, you get a chance, check out Fredericksburg. Mm-hmm. That's over in the Hill Country, kind of in the middle of Austin and San Antonio, and it's got some elevation, a little cooler mountains. It's one of the people here in this part of the state's favorite places to go for long weekends or vacation.
I love it, man. Hanging out with John McClain, brought to us by Horn Solutions. We're going to dive into your 53 projected roster here in a moment. Clint and I were mostly agreeing with a lot of your calls. The Joe Webb thing, you know, we can get into that. But you were at practice today. Clint and I were at practice today. Just give me a takeaway or two from today.
I was watching because Bill O'Brien had said yesterday they're not going to play the starters much more than they did in the last game because he likes joint practices, and he thinks those 4 joint practices – he got to see out of a lot of the starters what he wants to see. So I'm guessing Deshaun Watson may play 2 series or maybe the first quarter. And J.J. Watt won't play. And I don't know that I'd play Will Fuller, DeAndre Hopkins, a lot of those guys. But I'm continuing to watch Roderick Johnson. Mac Lill's not here. He's got that foot injury. Roderick Johnson played well. He's had a good week of practice. Now, DeMarcus Lawrence is not playing. He's hurt, so he's not going against him. I want to see him go against better talent. The Lions were missing four starters in the front seven, like the Texans held down nine starters against the Lions. But I like to see what he does against a little better competition, see him play more, and then I would play him in that last game against Scrubs just because he needs to know what it's like to be on the field, because I believe Roderick Johnson is going to be going against the Saints. And the Saints got some big-time outside pass rushers, and he needs all the PT he can get. And then Tyron Johnson was another one. I put him on that list because ideally he would be on a practice squad, but when people see a receiver constantly behind the defense, then that's the kind of speed that's hard to find. And he had a 38-yard kickoff return. So I was watching him on returns, on routes. One of the things I noticed, and this is why great players are great, DeAndre Hopkins was in the back of the end zone, made a leaping catch, but he didn't get both feet in bounds. So when he stopped in the back of the end zone, he put his head down, smacked the ball into his other hand, and you could tell he's beating himself up because he didn't get both feet down in practice. Can you imagine how good Allen Iverson had been if he approached practice like that? Most of the great players, and Clint, I'm guessing you can say this, who are continually great, one of the reasons is because they take practice so seriously. They're not all like Iverson or Lawrence Taylor, but, boy, watching Watt, and watching him drive Chanterrell Henderson back into a quarterback, watching Hopkins beat himself up because he didn't get both feet down, that's why they're truly among the greats.
That's why guys are good or not good, right? There's a lot of you've seen a million very, very talented guys just not quite make it because they couldn't get it. You don't get the nickname No Drop Hop if it's not very, very important to you. Look, I mean, I spent a lot of time covering the University of Arkansas for whatever reason over the last – when Bielema was there for 4 or 5 years, the receivers, they were unbelievably bad for the most part. There was a good little run for about 2 years, but for the most part, and you'd go to practice and you'd watch a senior drop a ball, wide open, drop a ball, and then he gets up and throws the ball around a little bit and giggles with the DB and then jogs back to the sideline, and you're like, that right there is exactly why there's nobody on this particular receiving corps that's going to step up and be worth the flip, because it don't matter. And you get a guy like Hop and who's the best in the game at it, and getting 10 toes in bounds on a perfect practice Friday is important, right? I mean that's
in shells, not even in pads.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask you something I just thought of. Who is the best Arkansas player you ever played with? And then who is the best Arkansas player you've ever seen?
Ever played with?
And it might be the same guy, or it could be two.
No, ever played with would be probably Brandon Burlesworth, the offensive lineman that passed, his whole story, and then what he was All-American. I mean, there just wasn't a ton of All-Americans that I ever played with. Either him or Anthony Lucas at the receiver position. Those two guys were super special players, and they were the backbone of our team, and they made the team better on a daily basis. The best I've ever seen, just freak athlete, was Darren McFadden. Darren McFadden got robbed of Heisman trophies simply because he was at Arkansas and the other guy was at Florida. And I'm not – look, Tim – I can't remember who the –
Well, I agree with you 100%.
I mean, Darren McFadden should have won two. Damn sure won, should have won two. But by far, Darren McFadden is the best Razorback I've ever seen.
Did Tebow win the Heisman over him that year?
One of the years he did. I can't remember who won it the next year. It was Tebow got him 1 year. And Tebow was great. There's no arguing that. McFadden's one of those guys, like very few guys you can put their highlight films on 10 years later and it doesn't look old. You know, D-Mac, you can put his highlights on right now when they were running that Wildcat with Gus Malzahn when Gus first got to Arkansas, and they look like it's 2019 speed. I mean, the whole deal. And it's just, he's the best I've ever seen relative to Arkansas football.
I love it, man. I love it. So let's dive into this 53. John McClain has it up on the Houston Chronicle. You can read it. We're going to talk about it right now. And his visit with Clinton Kamla, brought to us by Horn Solutions. We're Houston sports leader, Sports Radio 610. John, you have obviously Watson and McCarron, and you have Joe Webb. Do you agree with me that to start the season, assuming A.J. McCarron's thumb won't be healthy, you got to have Webb to be that backup. But when A.J. McCarron is ready to play and suit up on Sunday to be the, you know, hopefully, God forbid, he never needs to play, but that backup to Deshaun Watson, Do you agree with me that at that point, Joe Webb has shown the door and A.J. McCarron is your two and you don't go with a third quarterback?
I think it depends on injuries, of course, to other positions, because Joe is a good special teams player and O'Brien loves him. Things he brings a lot to the team that you don't see on the field. And so that's why I have Joe as the third quarterback. I think McCarron, he's wearing that little brace on his finger. He did not have to have surgery on the fracture, and so it's healing on its own. Originally, they thought he'd be back by the first game, and I haven't heard anything that made me think differently. But we got to watch him grip the ball and go out there and throw the ball like he does before he had the fracture. And if he can't do that, then Joe will be number two. And let me say this before we get into the roster. On Texas Sports Nation today, I have my five takeaways from practice. And the last one are the guys that I think are the candidates for the practice squad. So a lot of the guys that I leave off my roster projection, I have them going on to the practice squad.
And who are those guys?
Tight end Jarrell Adams, who has been to me the biggest surprise of camp. He was on the practice squad last year. He still got eligibility. I put both rookie running backs on there, Crockett and Higdon, Stephen Mitchell Jr., because I think until Kiki QT comes back, Duke Johnson can play in a slot. Jester Weah, put him out there. Safety Chris Johnson, Deontay Burton, the corner, Derek Beatty, corner, Jamel President, the outside linebacker, inside linebacker, Xavier Woodson, Lester, and Javi Edwards, the nose tackle. Those are, and then the Higgins. Those are the guys. There's like 14.
Albert Huggins.
Yeah. 14 guys for 10 spots that I think have a good chance. And a couple of them probably going to be, they're going to be surprises. But it's tough because I go over in my column for tomorrow each of the positions where it's going to be difficult and everything's going to be about special teams. And somebody's going to get left out who is good. And I have him keeping Khalil, although I think if he's not starting, he's going to be gone. That could open up a spot for Davenport. And they're going to keep more inside guys than normal, I believe, because they're playing well. And Titus Howard's missing time now with a broken finger. So maybe Davenport will slip in. I can't figure out what happened to Martinez Rankin. You know, he looked good last year in the last game. Next last game against Philadelphia, going against Fletcher Cox. And I thought, well, he's going to compete for that left guard job. And then once Titus Howard was moved there and the coaches liked him, and then Sunil Kelamete started having a really good camp in preseason, Rankin's third team. And if you're third team, and it doesn't matter if you're a third-round pick, I think he's out of here.
And he's third team inside or out, right? I mean, he is a guy that could in a pinch, could play outside.
He could, but he didn't look good at tackle, Clint. He's more for guard. He started games early at tackle because of injuries.
Right.
When Davenport had to play the right side and he had to be force-fed into the left. But I haven't heard anybody talking about him, good or bad. He's just kind of there.
John, when I've watched, it stood out that, I mean, he gets turned sideways immediately way too often. He gives way too much ground. And from those, I talked about it earlier, probably about a week ago in camp. And then, of course, Martin wasn't healthy and Mance was injured. And so it looks totally different now inside at that guard-to-guard position. But, boy, there was just so much. Even if they had their guy blocked, they were giving up 4 yards. And you're right there in the quarterback's face. And I'm just like, even when it was technically sound, it was weak. And so then you all of a sudden you get Fulton and you're like, okay, that's what's supposed to happen at guard. And Mance, that's what's supposed to happen at guard. Those guys have to have the ability to stand their ground. I talked to Wade Smith multiple times about it. And the two guys that I see that really struggled technique-wise are the two that didn't make it on your list, Rankin and Davenport. Those two guys, like Davenport's so tall, pad level is a serious problem for him. And so those two guys, I wasn't surprised to see them not on your final roster, even though at the end of the day, they could surprise you and end up providing some kind of depth on this roster.
They're going to have to come on real quick, real fast. And let me tell y'all something, see what you think. Okay, Zach Fulton starts off at right guard where he played last year. Then Mance goes down, he moves to center where he played his last year in Kansas City. Now Martin's back, Mance is out, and Titus Howard's out, so he moves to left guard. When Howard is back for the New Orleans opener,
Max Sharping,
who's going to play right guard? Is it going to be Zach Fulton, the veteran, or are they going to stick with Max Sharping because they love Sharping too?
My answer is Max Sharping. I mean, he's gotten real comfortable at right guard. I've gotten real comfortable with Max Sharping at right guard. That's my spot.
It's a great problem to have, man, because I think they can both play. What I've heard about Max Sharping is just for his ability to mentally retain the playbook, and he's not rookie like, and that to me that gives a guy an unbelievable edge relative to earning playing time. Now, he happens to be at a spot inside where you've got some vets and some pretty damn good players that have great film already in the NFL. So it's a good question, man. I would say Sharping, and then Fulton backs up across the board in the middle at all three positions, but that's a shot in the dark.
The only reason I think they would go with Fulton, and I don't know that they will, is just because he's a veteran and just because he started there and just because he's been a good soldier playing three positions. But it's only a matter of time because they think Sharping is going to be special at guard. And then, of course, he's still working as right tackle, too. And in case, you know, it'd be weird if they only kept the two starting tackles, and then because you got the two rookies have both played tackle, too, and they could slide out if it was an emergency.
So, John, I have one more question for you. Give me about a 30-second answer on this. The Falcons just traded Eric Saubert to the Patriots for a 7th-round pick. Eric Saubert sucks. Jarrell Adams does not. Do you think the Texans should be shopping Jarrell Adams right now?
Not for a 7th-round pick. The guy's done too well. I'd put him on a practice squad, hope nobody claimed him. And then while he's on the practice squad, I would hope nobody tried to sign him off there because the guy has really improved under Will Lawing, who's doing a tremendous job coaching those guys.
So, John McClain just told us that Matt Khalil has a foot injury. Bill O'Brien is reluctant to talk about Matt Khalil and any kind of injury with him. Why is that? Let's dive in next. Clinton Kamla, Houston sports leader, Sports Radio 610. All right, John McClain continues to sit in with us in the Twin Peaks studios, brought to us by Horn Solutions. On Monday, Bill O'Brien did not want to talk about Matt Khalil's injury or not.
Is he hurt? I don't have to release an injury report until the season starts. And every time I come up here, I get asked about 50 questions about injuries. So you'll get an injury report when the season starts. Right now, I'll tell you that he's out of practice per the head coach's discretion. How's that for an answer? Good?
All right. And John McClain is chuckling a little bit as Bill O'Brien ends that particular soundbite. John, about 20 minutes ago, you said that Matt Khalil has a foot injury. So, and we've heard, you know, Titus Howard finger, AJ McCarron thumb. So why the mystery here with Matt Khalil?
Well, first of all, Bill O'Brien hates to talk about injuries. He would rather go to the proctologist and have an exam 5
Moon
days a week
River.
Than talk about injuries. And because he believes anything about injuries could help the opponent. But he understands, you know, that we've got to find out because it's news. Listeners and readers want to know and about the team. And so Bill has said 1,000 times, I don't have to give an injury report till the regular season. He's done that. He just was in a bad mood Monday. He had answered the question the day before, and Matt happened to be the one that asked it, and there was nothing wrong with the question at all. And then Bill was in a bad mood. And then yesterday he came back and he talked forever. It's kind of his way to make up for it without saying so. But he will never talk about an injury unless a guy is gone for the year. And if a guy's gone for the year, you know, he'll talk about what it means to the team and everything. But that's that Patriot paranoia, the way New England is. And a lot of teams have become that way. Used to, when a guy got hurt, they told you what it was. And then I remember one year, when I was president of Pro Football Writers of America, Herm Edwards said, why do I tell the truth when I give an injury report and the Patriots will say it's his ankle when it's his shoulder? So why don't I do that? I said, I don't know. You'd have to ask the commissioner that one. And but teams give as little information as possible. And Bill's no different. One time, I can't remember what it was, he walked up to the podium. And he said, are you saying I'm moody? And I said, only in days and end and why? And he's got a temper, and he's lost it before, and he'll lose it again. He's better now than he was when he first got here. But he doesn't understand why people ask him about injuries all the time. It's a good thing he's not the head coach in Indianapolis.
Right, no doubt about that. Talk to us about that. You mentioned a foot injury, and I think we've been speculating going back and forth of whether it's a veteran. There's clearly something wrong. I mean, it's
he got
been
his
8
foot
days.
Stepped on in one of the joint practices, and hadn't been out since.
And something like that. I mean, is it just after 8 days could be precautionary and just. I mean, look, John. Here's the truth of the matter with Matt Khalil. I mean, you get 2.5 weeks into training camp, and you've got. I don't know how many games the guys played, whether it was 2 years ago or 4 years ago. You've got game film against NFL caliber defenses. You've seen it for 2.5 weeks. What in the hell is he going to show you in the next week that you don't already know about Matt Khalil?
Well, they know about him, but he's got to show more of it, and he's got to get better. They know he's a technician. He's smart. He's great to be around. Players love him. He helps the young players. He knows what to do, and I've heard you say this, sometimes you know what to do, but you just can't make the body do it the way you used to. Now, sometimes you can do it well enough to get by, you know, using the brains and the experience and the tricks of the trade where you don't have the quickness or the agility or the flexibility like you used to. And I don't know if he's that point yet, but the fact is Roderick Johnson has got his foot in the door. And if Roderick plays well against the Cowboys the way he played against Detroit, I think he'll be the starting left tackle when they play the Saints.
Well, what do you think the likelihood is of that? I mean, you've been at practice every day that I've been there, which is damn near every day. And so, I mean, what do you think about Roderick Johnson? What do you think about his ability to get it done at that left tackle
position?
When
he came out of Florida State, when he was at Florida State, he was really good. When he came out, he did well. The Browns drafted him in the middle round. They cut him. Texans claimed him. Last year in preseason, he did not play well. They cut him. Nobody claimed him. They put him on the practice squad. I never even considered the chance that he would make this team with all those other tackles they had, but without a lot of injuries. And then when he was moved to first team over Julian Davenport last week, and we asked O'Brien, what's up with Roderick Johnson being the left tackle over Davenport? And he didn't say anything bad about Davenport, but he started talking about a good offseason he had, what a good training camp he's had, and he deserved the opportunity. Then he went out, and when I watched each of the linemen 5 times on the first series. He didn't let his guy get close to him. And somebody said, well, he's playing against a backup. I said, I don't know who he's playing against. He's a backup. But he looked good. Now we want to see if he's going to look good again. If he does, the Texans are going to have a hard time pulling him out and putting in Matt Khalil, considering how much time Khalil has missed.
By the way, I looked at that because I do look at things like that. And far as I could tell, 95 for Detroit, who Roderick Johnson played against, he is a starter. On their depth chart, he was listed as a starter.
Well, that's good,
man. Because I was wondering, like, damn, he must have been playing against me over there. And I looked it up.
Well, glad you looked that up.
Well, it wasn't Trey Flowers, clearly. But Trey Flowers plays opposite this guy, and the depth chart could be wrong. But this guy was slated as a starter on the depth chart that I saw, which tells me enough. If you're a starter on any depth chart for Detroit, whether that's rotating or not, and Roderick Johnson goes in there and has a good game against you, then it's better than playing against. I saw a cut from Andre Dillard. Somebody posted on social media, and of course it was. I'm sure it had a spin where it was geared towards the Texans not getting Dillard and them getting Titus Howard. But I thought it was funny because it was him blocking a guy and doing a good job blocking a guy. And I looked it up, and it was a guy that will not be on their roster. It was an undrafted guy that will not be on their roster. And you just think, that's a great job. No disrespect, but it's not like he's blocking Reggie White over there.
Well, you can also go through a game film and find somebody that buries somebody in every game and put it out there and act like the guy's doing well. And I don't think, is Dillard starting? That's one reason they talked about a trade for
Lane Johnson,
whose real best position's left tackle, but he always played right tackle because Jason Peters was left tackle, and they could afford to trade him for Jadeveon Clowney because they could insert Dillard as the starter. And I don't know if that's going to happen, but it would make sense. Clowney would love to play for Jim Schwartz. Go back to weak side 4-3 in his natural position, get to line up wide in passing situations and see if he could become a bigger factor when it comes to getting sacks. So I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but I don't think anybody complained about getting Lane Johnson, who's also under contract for 3 years.
John McClain hanging out with Clinton Kamla, brought to us by Horn Solutions. So either late yesterday or this morning, it came out that the Washington Redskins turned down a first-round pick from New England in exchange for Trent Williams. Moments ago, I went on the internet and I saw that Ian Rappaport, who I find to be not reliable, says that that is absolutely untrue and that that didn't happen. I've said time and time again on this air and anywhere I get a platform, Ian Rappaport throws crap against the wall and hopes it sticks. Some of it's right, some of it's not. So I'm more inclined to believe the initial report that a trade offer was made from New England to Washington for Trent Williams, and Washington said no to a first-round pick. John, what's your read on that? And obviously we have talked, and you have told Clint that there's no way the Texans make this trade, and there's no way they trade a first-round pick. So, but first, let's unpack the reporting of it. Are you an Ian Rappaport guy? Do you trust him?
Well, it depends. Ian has had a lot of scoops, and he's had some information that's not true, but the team that he's closest to is the Patriots. That's who he covered. And so if he says it's not made, I tend to believe it. To me, and Mike Florio figured this out, this is a story that probably leaked by the Redskins to see if they could generate some interest from other teams, like, oh, my God, Patriots may trade for him. We better make our offer. But and, of course, Washington swears they're not trading him. They're going to keep him in C's, being fined.
Do you believe that?
$40,000 a day. I don't know, Rick.
I don't believe that, John.
Most players who are out at this time of year and not losing but $1,200 a week, it's easy to say and do certain things, but it's hard to miss those game checks. And if Williams hates Washington as much as everybody says, he hadn't said it, but people have said it, then he should stay out, try to force a trade, and then get a contract to make up all that money he's going to have to pay in a fine to them for missing out. Dwayne was healthy when he was traded to Seattle. Trent Williams hadn't been healthy, and he's got that issue that got him crossways with the Redskins about that growth. I can't remember, it's on his neck or his head. But Dwayne was told, you come up here, you play a season, you do well, then we'll talk to you about a contract. And they did. And he's played really well for Seattle. Trent Williams would probably be told, you come in here, you're not getting a new contract now, you play well, stay healthy, then we'll talk about the contract. Problem is, there are no guarantees in that situation for the player to get more money. That's all. I'm chewing a thing for my throat.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the lots. So check out one right here, John. I didn't know. I didn't want to jump on you. I didn't know if you were done there or what. So all right. I mean, so you're saying that. But the bottom line, let's bring this back to the Houston Texans. We've heard Bill O'Brien say that he and the collaborative panel that they have talk about their team and the league every single day. So we know that Trent Williams has been brought up. We know that a decision has been made. It's been bandied about. Do you think that they are looking at this report and it is rekindling anything?
Absolutely not. They don't give a rat's you know what about reports about Trent Williams and any other team in the league.
So why would they be so closed off to Trent Williams, John?
The only thing they go by is what they believe. And there's a lot of things out there about Williams, as we talked about. 31, hadn't been healthy in a long time, missed 13 games the last 2 years. Thing that would be the scariest is the contract issue. If he didn't get a contract after the trade, would he stay out? Would he force you to pay him? How much does he want at 31 years old? You know, Clint said he'd give up a one. I think you don't have a three to give up. And I wouldn't give up a one or a two unless I knew. And I wouldn't give up a one anyway. I'd give up like a four that was possibly be the three in 2021, something like that, if he stayed healthy for a season. Then I would talk to him about a contract based on the way he played.
Would you trade Clowney for him?
No, absolutely not. Clowney at this point is younger, healthier, and better.
All right, John McClain breaking
throwing
it down.
Throw in a slot
man.
Corner, then I might talk about it. All right.
Aaron Colvin, talk to me about what you haven't seen from number 22, because a couple weeks ago you put out that you didn't think he was going to make the team.
Right now, I thought they would trade for a slot corner. Not sure they still won't, but he's the guy. Brian Body Calhoun's behind him. Xavier Crawford's been hurt. Right now, if you think about their starting corners, Bradley Roby's done really well. You know what you're getting from Jonathan Joseph. You got Colvin trying to bounce back from a bad season. Then you got Lonnie Johnson coming off the bench outside. And he looks good sometimes and he looks bad sometimes, typical rookie. But you don't know what you got with him. You know, a guy didn't play major college football but 1 year, and then he comes in the NFL. He's trying to cover the best receivers in the league. I use that as like maybe first time Clint left Baytown driving and came over to I-10 or 45 or something and tried to drive different over animal. Here. It was a rude awakening he had to adjust to.
Ain't no doubt about it, John.
Can you imagine the torture that he gave the student driver? Operator in that car back in the day.
I got a ticket on I-10 before I ever got my license, man. I came to an Astros game and I was headed back to pulled over, man.
What did Linda Gale do when she heard about that?
She wasn't real happy about it. But see, my dad got in the way. My dad screwed it up. My dad started dog cussing me before, and my mom was like, "Damn, Ernie, you gonna ask if he's okay? You gonna at least ask if he's okay before you rip him and ground him?" So I was like, "Okay, thanks, Ma, get me out of that deal."
Yeah. Good cop, bad cop in that scenario.
That's right.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us, and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.